He follows his block. He's in. Touchdown, North Dakota. Touchdown, Kaminsky. His second today. Kaminsky rolling out, and he throws to the corner. He's got a man pulled in. Touchdown, Tang Tang. Yes, sir. Touchdown, North Dakota. How about that?
UND Football 360.
Going deep. They've got something they like. It is caught deep downfield. B.J. Fleming, touchdown, North Dakota. Touchdown, North Dakota. 82-yard catch and run, and UND strikes first.
Analysis, commentary, news, and a look ahead. Look ahead. It's all things UND football. This is the UND Football 360 Podcast.
Touchdown, North Dakota!
With your host, Kelly Howe, and Tate McNamara.
Well, things keep rolling. Another win for UND Football and another check mark off the list. I know the football team said, no trap game. We're not talking about it. It's a media thing, so maybe it was a little podcast thing. We brought it up a little bit last week, but they quickly answered this week, the UND football program, with another big win over Indiana State. 6-2 on the season, and really, Kelly, the road is in front of us. It's kind of in our hands right now, wouldn't you say?
Seems that way. This is where you want to be. You know, after that start, you know, losing to Kansas State, losing to Montana, you know, not a huge surprise, but you know, everyone was, well, geez, you know, whatever. We got to get some wins now type of thing. Well, they've reeled off 5 in a row. So sitting at 6-2, you're where you want to be, 4-0 in the Valley. And, they're where they need to be right now. And it's all you can do. I mean, the coaches, they got to be happy. You know, they doesn't seem like they're ever really happy because they're trying to push these guys and show them you're not happy until you're, you know, hoisting a trophy type of a mentality. So, yeah, this has been fun. I mean, Coach Berg brought, he said, no, there's no look past. They're not going to be looking ahead. They're not going to have a down game. They're not going to, you know, come out flat type of thing just because it's Indiana State. And, you know, could it be coach speak? Could that be, you know, no, I think he was right. And I think he knew what he was talking about because he's there every day. And he can sense it. You know, I think he's sensing a different mentality. And yeah, the UND, they did what they had to do again. There was nothing real bad about that.
Do you like how they're doing it too? Because depth has been a concern on this team, and we are getting depth out there. We're seeing what some of these guys are able to do. It's been nice. The fourth quarters, we've seen a lot of people play this year. Well,
for the future and maybe even the end of the year, if they have to get in there, yeah. I mean, that's a great point, Tank, because you got to develop depth, and that's why the best teams, you know, like South Dakota State, NDSU, they engineer blowouts throughout the years. They always have. So then the second half, their backups are playing. Well, I've said this on the show many times. The first time you're out there, you don't know what's going on. The whole year. The entire year is just, you're swimming, everything's moving super fast, but you got to get it over with because the next year it slows down completely for you. Now, it's not easy. I'm not saying it becomes easy, but it's completely different that next year. So you got to get it out of the way. Well, if you can get it out of the way for these backups when they're freshmen and, you know, just not expected to play, well, you're just setting yourself up for future success.
Yeah, I mean, after the Portland State game, I know the coaches weren't happy with how we finished that game. But there again, a lot of guys seeing their first playing time. But I think you're starting to see that improve now. They're getting used to it out there and playing with a lot of energy in that fourth quarter. The guys that don't see a lot in the first three quarters. Injuries, though, a concern. We haven't talked a lot about injuries, you know, just here and there, but they're starting to pile up, but you don't really notice it on the field right now.
Yeah, and not noticing it, which is good. But, it looked like D-lineman Wyatt Bell, he converted over from O-line. That could be a long-term one. I think that was his knee, it looked like, so he may be out, which D-line is getting thin. It's getting real thin, Tank. Luckily, we only have, you know, two. We only play two technically. I mean, they can move around from the end to the D-line, but big mass bodies. We only need two of them. So that's what's kind of keeping us in the game right now. They should get D-lineman Grady Kench back, I believe. He's going to come back possibly this week or next week. That'll help greatly. JTJ hurt his ankle there late at the end of the game. I think that was like a high, kind of a rolled ankle type thing. I don't think it was.
It looked bad. Yeah. The way he was pointing, I was watching that part of the game on TV, and I was like, oh, no. Yeah, right. You don't like to see those at all, but
yeah,
thankfully, yeah. I'll take a high ankle sprain over what I thought it was going to be.
Right, could be a little bit, but I don't think it's the worst. Bennett Walker, corner, is still out. The turf toe, it's just not coming around, apparently, or coming around very slowly, put it that way. So, I don't know. They probably wouldn't run him out there this weekend anyway. I mean, the corner play we're getting is very good right now. Yeah, and so we'll get into that later. But Bennett Walker, probably another week, probably another week of seeing if they can get the turf toe to come around. Those things are weird. Most of the time it's the big toe, so I don't know which one is, but geez, it's just an odd one. They thought he might be back right after Montana even. I mean, and it's been 5 weeks ago?
I think everything's different. Probably every position is different, but from when you played, do you remember what is that worst nagging injury to play through? The ankle or the turf toe or?
Well, they didn't have turf toe when I played. I don't know. I don't even know what it was because I never heard of that.
It was carpet toe because that's what you guys played on.
Magic turf toe?
Yeah. Cement toe. That's what it felt like.
But all of a sudden this turf toe thing popped up and I don't know. But they're just nagging ones. Basically ankle. Yeah, ankle.
Ankles would be the worst.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I know, I think it was Jai Martin that got the bursitis in his knee or something where I used to get that all the time where it pops your bursa sac in your knee. It's kind of a fluid that lubricates the knee. I don't know, something like that is what they told me. So it pops. Well, if it pops, your knee fills up. Boom. It's just like a ball. Well, you look at it, but the problem is you can't flex it. Now you run out of skin. Your skin's maxed out. So you're trying to pull if you try to pull your foot to your butt, it won't because you don't
have it. Does it hurt?
Yeah, it hurts. It stings to the touch. But nothing's wrong. That's the point. So I learned that right away. I'm like, well, okay, nothing's wrong really. It just hurts and it's limiting my mobility. You kind of look different running out there, but you can go. So, I think those pop up every once in a while and they're nagging. But I think once players realize, I'm fine. It just kind of stinks, then they're fine. So Jai Martin, he'll be fine.
And this
with that.
Is the time of year where everyone's going through something, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and you just,
I would think shoulders,
up, right?
Shoulder injury has got to be pretty big the way those guys hit each other. And O-linemen, oh boy, I can't imagine what they're going through with their, basically, shoulders, knee, elbows. I mean, they're just those guys. And we've had other, Caleb Olson got hurt right away. And other than that, we've ran the same O-line out every week. Yeah.
I'm knocking on
that
wood,
man. Holy cow. Because, I know. So, it's been good. But, those are kind of the injuries. I would say D-line is the one where we've always been worried about it, but now they lost one more. But Kench might come back. So, they'll make it through.
Okay. Well, let's just dive into that game review, the Kelly Howe Agency game review. Oof. Sounds
there we go.
Sounds like a big deal official. With a title like that. Phone number?
This game review is official at 701-532-0624.
Okay. Yeah. Call today. 564-221 in yardage. And talking last week, we said we're going to get it on the ground. And we did. But I don't think any of us on our cards had Jerry throwing, four touchdowns? Yeah.
Four touchdowns, 300 yards.
Yeah, I don't.
He just keeps rolling along.
I don't
along.
Think we saw that happening, right?
Yeah, he, Jerry. I don't know what else there is to say now. I mean, it's proven now. Okay, the next thing will be let's see him do it in a huge game. Well, okay, all right, we got NDSU coming up. That'll be a huge one, and we got SDSU coming up after that. So, but he's already done it at Kansas State. And he played decent. He didn't play his best game, but he played decent at Montana. And every other game has been just rock solid. He had an interception, but his arm got hit again. So he has two interceptions on the year. Both times his arm got hit and the ball fluttered up in the air. So they aren't missed throws.
I thought maybe he should have, maybe not thrown that one, but, you know.
Tried to get rid of it quick.
Yeah.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And you can fault him. Yes, yeah. You can throw some blame on him. But my point is he's just not throwing.
If I was finding anything, I was like, I'm that one. But, no, I'm not going to nitpick Jerry football.
No, he's not throwing into double coverage down the field and making you scratch your head or anything. It's good football. And, and they're rolling along in and out of that huddle. No, nothing.
There is no huddle.
Yeah.
That's what Jerry told me.
Yeah. They're kind of rolling. They just keep going and going and going. They're never late. You know, he's never in a hurry and panicking.
No.
It's just smooth. It's just all game. It's smooth. And granted, the third quarters at times aren't always smooth, but we don't care about that because we're always up by 24 or 28, so it doesn't matter.
And it all kind of goes back to what we were talking with Isaac Frickty, the extra time he comes down to talk about the game plan, and again, learned it from Simon last year. But that pass, I know it's been brought up a lot to Sawyer. I mean, it's hard to see how that was even possible. The way he caught that off his hip.
On his back hip.
How did he do that? And then he didn't even break stride in that.
Yeah, and then he just turned his body in motion and just kept running. I was like, what?
How?
I don't know. Well, that's why he's... he's the real deal. That's Sawyer. I mean, Seidel, at this point, I put it out on Twitter. I said he's an all-round complete back. Now, I wasn't trying to say, you know, he wasn't before or anything, but we had always labeled him the speed guy, you know, the jet sweep guy. He doesn't run any jet sweeps. He runs between the tackles. He pounds it up between the tackles just like everybody else. He bounces plays that need to be bounced. You know?
Was that his touchdown where he, like, ping-ponged out?
Yeah. Like, yep, just ran into the back of the guy.
He took a pretty good shot, you know? I mean.
Yeah. Boom, ran into the back of him, bounced off, went around the end. Well, no one's going to catch him once he does that. So, yeah, they got a good thing going
right
now.
Did you see this out of him when they signed him? You knew.
I knew he was electric. Yeah, right? We knew he was electric. Danny Freund, I remember talking to Danny Freund about it. He goes, oh, yeah, he's good. He's like, you're going to love this kid. Wait till you see him. He's good. You know, they knew they had a twitch. They knew they had something there, but you just don't know. You know, you don't know until they hit the field, or you don't know what a kid's like, really. But he got on campus, and this is what you need. I mean, look at the plays that Seidel's made this year. I mean, you can't even count them. I mean, we'd be on here all day.
Yeah.
Just breaking plays that other guys aren't going to make on this team. Okay, they're not. Or they go for 20 yards. Sawyer goes for 60. That's the difference. I mean, he's just too much for a lot of guys right now, and getting him through, getting him a hole, getting him 5 to 7 yards downfield is the key right now, because once he gets there, he makes that cut. And when that cut happens, that's more than likely he's going to win versus the safety or the linebacker, whoever's there.
Yeah. Offensively, just, you know, we pounded him in the second quarter again. That just seems to be our quarter right now.
Oh, unbelievable. What do I got here, Tank? 107-14. 107-14 in the second quarter. I don't know what's going on. I mean, that tells me, okay, you know, the first quarter is going well too, but they're adjusting mentally. They're not making any, they're changing the game plan, but
they're
Isaac,
just finding the flow and finding their groove into the game.
What
right?
was the other team's game plan coming in? Well, the first quarter tips it off. And then that's Schmidt, and that's Frickty. So they're watching. Well, Frickty, it takes him a series. You can see he runs a series. Sometimes it's three and out. But then you can see the next series, the next plays are nothing like the first three plays.
Yeah.
Because now he started to see, okay, I'm just going to try something a little bit different, knowing I'm going back to those first three plays again. But I'm going to see what do they do when I do this type of thing. And then he sees it. Okay, sends in a next play, then he's watching. You can tell the way they're watching. They're just analyzing to see what the defense is going to do versus what each set versus a jet sweep, you know, versus a bubble screen versus how are they lining up? What are they doing? What are they doing with motion? How are they covering motion? Is motion tipping anything off? You know, they're doing – so he's throwing all this stuff at him the first series or two and then dials it in. Mentally, I think he's like, all right, I got it. And then they go.
And you speak of motion. Yeah. Now you got all these tools because they know he can hit anybody on the field with every game. He's hitting 8-9 receivers.
Oh, yeah.
Now you throw Christian into motion and hand it off to him. And it's like,
yeah, they added Hoskins back
in
again.
The last few weeks, he's been more active in the offense. And God, that's just another threat there. But Caden Dennis, before we go over to the defense, what did you see where he had such a big game? Why was he the one this week?
I think just the spot he was in. I mean, the touchdown was a little skinny post down the middle, and he ran a good route, got inside the guy. Now Dennis is, what, a 6'2", 6'3", range. So he got inside the guy, was able to, you know, and made it an easier throw for Jerry. So there's a touchdown, caught a pass early, little out. He just happened to be the guy, you know, and in the past he had dropped a pass or, you know, dropped one or two, you know, so maybe, I don't know if that took him out of rhythm type of thing, but all of a sudden Jerry, this game seemed to find him. I mean, no way. And DeMontagnac at 60 some yards. So he found these guys this week. That's a great sign. Fleming wasn't needed. We scored 46 and Fleming wasn't a major part of this thing whatsoever.
TD, right?
Yeah. And touchdown.
That was a nice one.
Yeah. But it's not, I mean, it wasn't dominant. We didn't need him to go to hit an 80 yarder, you know, that type of thing. So this is a very good sign that Jerry is having time, number one. The O-line's giving him time to find these guys downfield. And he's finding different targets. And like you said, Dang, what? I mean, it's 9 to 11 receivers a week are catching a pass. So I don't know.
I like to, back home, we'd call that a well-balanced offense, right? I mean, that's what it is.
Hillsboro, they call that.
It was nine-man football when I played, so I was just lucky to be out.
You want a well-balanced? I don't even know if you'd call it balanced. You want a statistic from the Shanley game Friday night?
I read your Twitters and your tweets and your exes. We all know how you feel on high school football right now.
No, I don't even want to talk about that. That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. You trying to get me fired up here, Tank? Because you know it doesn't take much.
I was going to wait later in the show. Right? I've got that in my back pocket. You know, hey, stick around for the fireworks, folks.
Yeah. Hey, you know how many plays Shanley ran? You want 101 in a single football
game. In their last game?
101 football plays. Okay, they had 566 yards, 101 football plays. We were there, I think we got home about close to 10. Game started at 7.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a wild one. But anyway, since we're talking well-balanced offense, I don't know if it was balanced at all, but it was 101 football plays. I just want to throw that in there.
Hey, got to give this to the UND defense. Three interceptions, right?
Oh.
They're starting to stick.
There we go. It's awesome, too. Wiltshire, our guy got one. He got it. And it was a nice little, it was a tip ball he got, too. Like, see, what did I say? When was that? I'll say week three. I'm going to make up a time. I said on this show, once this defense starts catching those interceptions, everything's going to change. Because that's one less possession, that's deflating to one side, inflating to the other side, and it changes. Interceptions change everything in a game. It's just the fact.
Okay? And there were guys, like, on all of them, there were guys there. It was
Yeah, it was good. So three interceptions in this one. Wiltshire, Bluett, Erkman got one. That's Erkman's second big play. It was a tip ball, but he's right there. So we had two guys. Nice they only return. Had one.
I thought he was going to take it to the house there. He wanted that one bad.
Yeah, so he's getting him in there is huge. Now he's getting experience as one of those three safeties out there. So we're getting more guys out there. If we can have six playing, they don't get wore down. Injury pops up. Hey, no problem. Send the next guy in while this guy heals up type of thing. This is it's getting good. If they seem to have their roles down in the secondary, put it that way, because they're playing very well.
But I wanted to talk about who maybe set the tone early in this game, because I was at the lake doing leaves on Saturday, and Moorhead beat Alexandria in 12U hockey on Saturday.
Oh, yeah.
The first win of the year, 6-2, by the way. I got to throw that out for daughter Olivia. But they were talking about the defensive line big time on the radio, and specifically Lance Rucker. I mean, he sounded like he got off, like he was in a track meet and he wanted to go.
Yeah, Rucker, his stat line wasn't huge, but what do we got here? Yeah, his stat line, but he was hurrying things up.
Yeah.
He was in there all the time, and he was, we got the stats coming up here that we'll get to, but they were hurrying the quarterback up too much. Keegan Patterson, he had no chance in the first half, and they pulled him actually at halftime. Because they just needed a spark. And, it was just too much up front. The pass rush was relentless. And, Rucker, like you said, was part of it.
Yeah, 11 tackles for loss, 6 sacks for UND. Well, sorry for that fan on Sac City.
Yeah.
It's a lot of work.
See, I noticed that guy. Yeah, that's what we need. That's what that guy wants. And I had that clip on there. What was it, Twitter last year or whatever, when the one they had it on TV, and I think I made a little gif of it where he where it goes over and flips it, puts the one down and slaps the sign, just fired up here and dance about the sack. It was awesome. But yeah, those guys hit 6 of them. See, we got to keep them busy, and when they're busy, the fans are in it, it just rolls. Interceptions, fans love defense. Okay, the offense can score points all they want, but there's something about a football fan who loves their defense dominating the other team's offense more than they love the offense dominating the other team's defense. They just do, because that means we're better than you. You're not going to score. I don't know if that's a feeling, a superiority feeling or what, but fans love it. They love sacks, they love pressure, and they love interceptions.
Yeah, good win both sides of the field. I will say, my score prediction wasn't that far off until that punt block for a touchdown. Well, this is 46-10. I said 53-7.
Hey, I had 47-10. So, tank. It was 46-10. I had 47-10, and I'm sitting there like, finally, all right, this is beautiful. Yeah. And then we get a punt block for a touchdown. I'm like, what the?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they'll figure that one out.
You kind of were like, whoa, wasn't far off.
Yeah. It was good, but yeah, Indiana State 5 for 19 on third down. That's good. That's good defense. I mean, we didn't allow any third downs. The one thing that was brought up, I know, to me during the week was Indiana State had 4 or 5 batted down passes of Jerry's. So those go as incompletions, but something to watch. I don't know. He doesn't seem to have a low, release point. They were timing it up. They seem to know. They seem, maybe it's an RPO thing. Maybe they know it's a rhythm thing where he drops back. So they were like, maybe
expecting it.
Yeah, they told themselves, hey, we're not going to get there this week. Get your hands up. 1, 2, get ready to get your hands up type of thing. Because a lot of those guys were waiting. I mean, they had kind of stopped their pass rush and then were ready to jump up and bat the ball down. And they got it, like I said, 4 or 5 times. So something to watch. If Indiana State did it, another team might be like, okay, hey, they did it, and it worked. So
we had an O-line coach that said, the hands go up in front of you, the helmet goes
right
in the crotch.
Yep.
If they want to expose themselves.
Yeah, low blow. Yeah. There you go.
They're talking a little higher for a while. Yeah, good game. And we did what we needed to do in that game. So let's put that one to bed. Well, let's see. Development Homes, guest of the week. And this should be a fun one because I say former NFL player, but Kelly, this guy looks like he could still play when you see him around the UND program. First year coach, he's an assistant tight ends coach, and we welcome Brandon Bostic to the program. Welcome, coach. How's it going today?
Hey, Tank. Nice to meet you and Kelly. It's going good today. We had practice earlier. We had a good day at work, ate some lunch, had some meetings, so it's going pretty good so far.
What's the feeling up there right now? 6-2, coach. We're going to get into your background and everything, but you guys keep rolling along. It's week 9. Okay. So you know, as much as anybody, this time of the year, everything's not as fun anymore. It's like starting there. They might be getting tired, they might be getting a little wore down. How are we doing as a program up there going into week nine? And do you guys have to, do you feel like you got to change things up just a hair to keep them motivated? Or is this a group that can just keep rolling?
No, we're just going to keep rolling. Coach Eric Smith does a great job of just, you know, giving us a weekly message and what he wants us to focus on, you know, and he just sets us up for success. You know, he puts together a great practice plan and a great, you know, season plan. So the guys are feeling good. We're excited. Like you said, we've been winning. So there's a lot of excitement, a lot of motivation to keep going and keep improving. Coach always says we're an ascending football team. So every week we're just trying to get better every day, just trying to just grow as a team and grow as a player and as coaches. So we just trying to, you know, just show up every day and work and do our best on Saturdays.
I'm guessing, just looking at your past, you kind of have that JYD mentality in you. Just South Carolina, go to Newberry College, play Division II, and then an undrafted player into the NFL. You've had to fight your whole way through, sounds like.
Yeah, that's definitely was my mentality. I had that junkyard dog mentality, that underdog mentality, you know, coming from Newberry, Division II school. I played receiver there, so... I played 4 years there, and then I went on to try out for Green Bay, and, you know, my career started from then. So I've always had that underdog mentality. Just put in the work, and everything that you want will kind of work out for you. So that's kind of my mindset. I just, you know, work for everything I had and work everything I got. So I'm just trying to keep that going, and that's what kind of, I guess, propelled me into the NFL. And so now it's propelled me into a coach.
I mean, you talk about working for everything you got. You know, we're going to get into the coaching part, but what brought you back? What brought you into the coaching side, number one? And what were you doing prior? As before you answer that, what were you doing like the last few years? And then you said, hey, I want to get into coaching. Then you ended up at UND. Take us through that.
Well, I started playing, but my first year was 2012. And on the Packers. So I played from 2012 to 2016. In 2017, I finished my last 2 years with the Jets. So I played a total of 5 years, retired in 2017. And then I just, you know, entered that transition, that tough transition that most athletes go through, you know. I played football since I was five. So from five to 27, 28, that's all I've done. That's all I focused my life on. And so I put everything I had into it. And so I did that. I reached like a childhood dream. And then when it was over, I had nothing to fall back on. So I went through that struggle. I was just struggling to find the next thing for me. I left college early. I left college a semester early. So I didn't finish my spring semester. So I didn't have my college degree when my football career was over. So I didn't have pretty much going on. All I had was a 5-year NFL career. And, you know, like a few, you know, that's all I had left. So I had to find out what was next for me. So I went through that dark transition period, just lost, trying to find like who I am without that jersey on, you know, who I am without the uniform on in the past. So I went through that transition, just struggling, trying to figure it out. It was went through a dark transition for a few years, went through like a dark, depressive mindset, just a lot of anxiety, worrying about what am I going to do next, you know, kind of just stuck in between of stuck in life. I was just stuck for a few years. So it took me a while to get out of that mentally. And then I just found football again. COVID hit. I was still struggling, still trying to figure it out, still going through the transition. Just lost and just confused. Cause like I said, I played football since I was five and that's all I'd done. So I kind of lost my identity for a minute, lost who I was as a person and as a man. So I just had to go back to work, you know, go back to that underdog mindset, you know, figure out what I enjoyed and what I like to do. And then COVID hit and everybody was just, you know, lost and confused and trying to figure out life. So that's when I found football and coaching. I got back into football because during that transition, I kind of fell out of love with football. You know, I wasn't really watching football, wasn't involved with football because football, I guess, kind of had me in that stuck mindset and that stuck place because it was over for me. I had nothing else to fall back on. So I fell in love with football again during COVID. I coached during COVID. I coached at Saguaro High School in Arizona for Jason Mons. He's now the tight ends. He's actually the tight ends coach at Arizona State now. So I coached for him for a year. It was high school ball. Then again, it was a little adjustment for me because I went from the pros to coaching high school. So it was kind of a struggle there. I'm like, man, these kids don't really kids don't have that fire that I got. They don't love it as much as I got. They don't watch film as much as I do. And so I went through that kind of battle. I'm like, okay, I love the game, but maybe I want to play college. So maybe I want to coach college. So I know I had a lot of buddies that I played with in the NFL that are coaching. So I just kind of just put a couple tweets out there, a couple messages, and like, you know, hey, I want to coach football. And so Isaac Freakty, you know, I played with him in Minnesota in 2012. After I got released from Green Bay, I went to Minnesota, and that was his rookie year. So he was coming in, I was coming in. I was a receiver, and I was a tight end, and he was a receiver. So, and we're both undrafted, both underdogs, both junkyard dogs trying to make that roster that year. So I hit it off with him. Fast forward, now it's COVID in 2021, and he sees like a couple of tweets about me, a couple of messages, and, you know, hey, Brandon, do you want to coach? And I was like, hey, no, I don't want to coach yet. I'm still trying to figure it out. And then so years go on, fast forward to 2024. I'm like, hey, like, I'm in Texas now. I was living in Texas. I was training kids, like training tight ends. I had like probably a group of 20 kids I was training. So okay. I was training and developing kids and just working on my craft, working on my skills to be a coach now. And so I was just developing myself. And then 2024 came, like, hey, Isaac, like, you know, 2024, hey, I think I'm ready. I think I'm ready to take that next step. So, you know, he welcomed me in here. He told me that there's a new head coach, Eric Schmidt. And I reached out to Coach Schmidt. I think I sent him a Twitter message, like, hey, like, I want to be involved in this program. And obviously Isaac was there too. So I had a phone call with Coach Smith. I liked everything that he said. I liked what he was about. I loved everything, you know, that he was bringing to Grand Forks. And, you know, he's a guy that I would love to play for if I was still playing. So, well, I'm like, you know, like, that's the perfect opportunity. There's a head coach, you know, that he's about all the things that I'm about. He's a pro. And then there's Isaac Freaky. So that's pretty much my journey to Grand Forks. And so I just took it from there and have been loving it ever since.
Just curious how tough that is, you said, from the transition, because I'm guessing you're waiting around for that next phone call, and then it doesn't come, and then it doesn't come, and your agent's telling you, I'm trying to get you a workout, and then their workouts are not happening. How long does it take you, or how long did it take you to finally say, okay, the call's not coming, I got to move on with my life?
Man, that was I retired 2017, so 2018, 2019, 2020.
You're still COVID waiting.
And I was I wasn't really waiting. And I knew my career was over, but still had that fire inside me. Like, I can do it, but I'm not getting the calls. But at the same time, I need to move on with my life. So I'm like, what do I do? Like, who am I? Who is Brandon Bostic? Like, I don't even know who I am. I played football all my life. I was an athlete. Like, what skills do I have, and what do I have to – what did I learn from the NFL? So I was just trying to figure out, again, who I was as a person, not the athlete. So once I went through that transition, man, it was a lot of mental health work, a lot of therapy, a lot of just talking to my therapist, just trying to figure out all these things. And so I don't think I could put a time on it. I think it's just kind of just something that you just work on and you just work towards. Because like I say now, like, every athlete is going to go through that. You know, like, these college kids here, like, when their senior year is done, like, there's a transition that you have to go through from athlete into, you know, I don't like to say the normal world, but the regular world. You're not an athlete no more, you know, people aren't cheering for you. You don't have games. You don't get to compete anymore. So I don't think there's a time limit on it. And I think it's just different for everyone else, different for each person. You know, I think it's just something that you go through and you still continue to go through, but I think your perspective changes on life as you go through it.
If you had to look down the road, what's your goal with this? You know, obviously you want to get back into coaching, and you feel, you know, you're feeling this is great. This is your, you found what you're looking for, I think, you know, in the collegiate coaching world, let's call it. But you're at the FCS level in Grand Forks, North Dakota, and you're just getting your first start. You're getting your feet wet. What's your goal? Mm-hmm. What do you envision yourself doing down the road, or what do you want to be coaching?
You know, I've been thinking about that. I'm enjoying college coaching. I'm enjoying where I'm at now at Grand Forks. I'm, you know, trying to just be where my feet are, as they would say, but I love coaching football. I love coaching tight ends. I'm fine with being a position coach. I have no desire to be a head coach or offensive coordinator, any of that, but I'm fine with just being a tight end coach. Like, that's my ultimate goal. And obviously, in anything you do, you want to reach the top. So my ultimate goal is obviously to get back to the NFL and hopefully be an NFL tight end coach. So I'm just trying to, you know, grow and learn and gain as much experience as I can while I'm here, and see where it takes me. If I'm here next year, great. If I'm not, great. So I'm just here to learn and get better and just pour into the guys and as much as I can and just win, continue to win and continue to grow as a person, continue to grow as a team and just, you know, help any way I can. It might not be football, but it might some things, you know, I always tell the kids, like, I can help you. Like, life is bigger than football. You know, you won't be able to play football all your life, and there's life after football, and it's going to end. So, you know, I just try to pour into the kids any way that I can, mentally, physically, football, just any way that they need me. So,
Brandon, just if you haven't got the coach's memo in the NFL, you don't have to go home at night and call recruits. So it's just a little one less thing you got to worry about if you get to that level. So it's a little easier, I think. Yeah.
For sure. And it's a lot more. A lot more time spent on football, because that's, you know, when you're in the NFL, that's all you have. That's your job. You know, college is a little different. Like you said, you have to recruit, have to check on grades. So I'm enjoying it. I'm loving where I'm at now. Yeah. So
I've only heard things about the NFL. Obviously, we don't know anything about it. But are those coaches there as much as it sounds like? You know, when you hear little tidbits about, yeah, the NFL, it's quiet in there. It's not, you know, like Nick Saban, they said hated it. You know, because it was quiet, nobody's coming around, he's not talking to anyone. But then you hear the same, on the flip side, you hear they're working like 6 in the morning to 10 at night, and they're just nonsense. Is it truly like that in the NFL for a coaching staff?
Yeah, definitely. You know, you just grinding. There's no time limit. You know, you just constantly just trying to learn and, you know, put a game plan together. And so, yeah, there's no really time limit. And there's nothing else you got to do, you know. It's football, like that's your job, and you know, it's a very, I guess, sought after job. So, if like you have to be there for as long as it takes to get the job done.
So, Coach, when did you arrive to Grand Forks?
I got here like February, March. So
February or March.
It wasn't even, I was gonna say spring, but that's not spring for Grand Forks.
No, yeah. No, it was winter. A couple months off there, Coach. Yeah.
Yeah, that was winter, so I got here.
What's the biggest thing this program has improved on from the day you got here till right now? In your eyes?
That's a great question.
Could be off the field, could be support, you know, player support, that type of thing, you know.
I would say culture. You know, the culture has changed. I wasn't here for last year, but I can just see and feel the culture and what Eric Schmidt and what Coach Schmidt is about here and what he's all about. I can just, you know, see the guys continue to show up every day and work, continue to be motivated, continue to, you know, just want the information and work hard at practice. So I just started to see all those things. And because when we first got here, it was just words and just PowerPoints. And there was just things that Coach was showing. He was talking, you know, he's trying to, you know, put his stamp on the program and trying to change the culture here and bring a, you know, a different culture here. And so it was just words on the screen and it was just, you know, words on papers. But now that I'm here and I've been here for a while, it's been great to see it. So that's what I would say the biggest thing has been, just the transition, the transformation in the culture and just the energy here.
Your duties as a coach, you know, you say assistant tight end coach with Gordie Haug, coaching. Yep. What else do you do, like, on a daily basis? Do you dabble into a few different things, you know, film, whatever, recruiting, you know? What else do you do on a daily basis to try to, you know, get yourself to be a more well-rounded coach?
You know, I try to learn from everyone on the staff, not just Gordie or not just, you know, Isaac, the offensive coordinator, Coach Freaky, but I try to learn from everyone. Every coach has their skills and every coach brings value. Every coach has been through it and been doing it longer than me. So I just try to be a sponge and just soak it up and just learn from everyone that I can, even the players, learn from just everyone in the building. I'm just trying to learn and just see what they do, see how they operate. And just, that's just how I've been doing. So
hey, you gotta be happy with your tight end room. Coach, I was looking at that roster. It's a nice group. You know, you guys Stay, South, Ramadka, Baymeyer, Hafer, Coons. Yeah. Then you got the young guys too. I mean, they're all, you know, I think Baymeyer might be coming back. I don't know if you can speak to that or not, but most of them seem to be pretty healthy right now. You got Hayden Stay back. And I mean, is that, you gotta, you got to be fired up about the status of that room and the way they're playing.
I am. And Gordy is too. You know, me and Gordy, you know, we show up every day. We show up for the guys. We try to, you know, just give them as much information as we can. So the room is great. You got a little bit of everything. You got guys with speed. You got guys that can block. You got fullbacks. You got a little bit of everything in the group. They're a fun group to be around. They work hard. And, you know, it's a good group. You got a lot of talent. And we use the tight end a lot. We run a lot of 12 and 13 personnel. So a lot of guys are playing. A lot of guys are getting the opportunity to, you know, showcase what they can do. So me and Gordy are always, you know, trying to find ways, you know, that can improve the room and improve the guys, and just trying to, you know, keep them motivated and continue to coach them and continue to pour into them.
Couple of questions from Twitter. When I said what's come along the farthest since you got here, I was hoping you'd have Coach Schmidt's workout with you at 5 in the morning. I don't think he's participating in that, is he?
God. He does. He pops in there a few times. Okay, but, just, you know, he has a lot on his plate, so he has to get to work, and, you know.
Yeah. But the more you can get him in there, the better, I think, for the future. So
I'll tell him you said that.
Yeah, too. Someone said you're a big yoga guy. What do you find to be the best benefits for himself with this, and when did you start doing yoga?
Oh, I started doing yoga during COVID 2020. You know, because I've been an athlete for all my life, and the gyms were closed. There's nothing to do. I was just stuck. I was lost, trying to figure out life. And I just saw, I saw a lot of yoga studios. I'm like, you know, I'm just gonna try yoga. Like, give me something to do. That was pretty much the only thing that was open at the time. So I'm like, I need to start working out. I need to start getting my body back in shape. I need to, you know, get my mind right, get my body back to where I've been, and, you know, be an athlete again. So I just fell in love with yoga. And it's just, you know, reconnecting me with myself, and it's been good for me. Definitely helped me with a lot of, I deal with a lot of body pain and, you know, back pain, neck pain, you know, so it keeps me flexible, keeps me moving my body. And just, it gives me clarity when I'm on that mat, you know, just a place where I can go and just be peaceful and block out the world and just be myself and just tune into myself for an hour in that four on my mat. So it just gives me something to, I can go and, you know, move my body, exercise, and find peace. And, you know, that's what I enjoy. And that's what keeps me, I guess, keeps my body, I guess, in pretty much a good shape.
Yeah, as a longtime Viking fan, just the pain wearing that Packer uniform must have sucked, huh? I mean, just...
You know, it's funny. I've been blessed enough. I've worn both uniforms. Yeah. Obviously, I was on the Packers first, and I still have my Vikings uniform. So I've done both.
Yeah. One more question from Twitter, and I'm just adding this. Other than the red pepper, what is your favorite place to eat in Grand Forks? Because that's obvious, ooh, right? The red pepper. I mean, yeah, how can you turn that down?
Yeah. I like Speedway.
Oh, there you go. Place. Old school.
Yeah.
Hey, but here's the thing. It's been there forever, and it's packed. Corner to corner, that parking lot.
Yeah.
That place has been there forever, and it's still just rolling along, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a great place. I love Speedway, red pepper, Blue Moose. I like a good Blue Moose. I just went to Harry's Steakhouse last weekend.
Ooh.
That's a good place.
Good
food. They have a lot of good options on there. I need to go back and try to beef stroganoff they got there.
So you got a big frame. You work out a lot. I'm guessing you could like take down a 32-ounce steak pretty good.
Oh, yeah. Not 32.
Not
32. 10 ounce.
Yeah.
10 ounce.
Yeah. Got to keep the heart clean,
friends,
right?
All my friends joke with me because they laugh because I like my steak medium well. They're like, oh, man, you're ruining the steak.
Yeah. No. It's a little drier when you go that route, just to give you a heads up. Yeah.
But, well, hey, this weekend, Coach, before we let you go, South Dakota on deck, 5-4 on the season. You guys sitting at 6-2, the battle for Sitting Bowl here, even though we don't play for it anymore. But, it's been a long-time rivalry. What can you tell us about the Coyotes, specifically their defense?
Oh, man, they got a great defensive line. They got a lot of good players. Good scheme. They play hard, so we got to have our work cut out for us. But, you know, like Coach Mino always said, respect all, fear none. So we've been putting in the work this week. got a good game plan, so we're just going to go and, you know, do what we do, start fast and finish strong. So I'm looking forward to the game. This is my first time being part of, like, the North Dakotas and, like, the rival, you know, like, North Dakota, South Dakota, North Dakota State. So it's a fun rivalry. It seems like everyone's into it. The players are motivated and, you know, just ready to, you know, ready to prove that, you know, we're capable and we've been putting in the work on Saturday.
The UND Football 360 pregame show is proudly presented by Rumors Sports Bar, Grand Forks' home for pregame hype, postgame breakdowns, and every big moment in between. Whether you're meeting up with the crew or catching the game on the big screen, Rumors is where UND fans rally. Cold drinks, good food, sharp takes, and the kind of UND energy you can't fake. Development Homes, Inc., gaming, simulcast horse racing, pull tabs, blackjack, and the pig wheel. Interstate Industrial, Oilfield Services, the 1883 Collective. Hey, we're still here. The 1883 Collective is a 100% volunteer organization. It exists to support student athletes at UND. Contributions to the collective help fund support for unique ways to get students involved in the community. Want to add some juice to the excitement of the football program right now? Dollars to the 1883 Collective are fuel on the fire as we work to recruit and retain top talent in our football program. They work closely with partners in the athletic department and the Alumni Association to ensure they're providing second-to-none opportunities for student athletes that choose to come and stay at UND. Go to 1883collective.com, click on the Get Involved tab to make your contribution today. The Toasted Frog, whether it's the night before kickoff, post-game celebration, or just a solid date night, the Toasted Frog in Grand Forks delivers. From legendary fried pickles to craft cocktails and cozy vibes, it is the go-to spot for Fighting Hawk fans who know how to eat well. UND Football 360 is brought to you by TankLogo.com. Hey, it's your one-stop shop for promotional products, corporate apparel, signage, and print. Whether you're building a brand, outfitting a team, or making a statement, TankLogo.com takes care of you and your message from concept to delivery. Trusted by local teams, businesses, and anyone who wants to make their brand stand out. UND Football 360 is brought to you by Kelly Howe with Nodak Insurance. Trusted coverage from someone who knows North Dakota inside and out. Whether you're protecting your home, farm, or future, Kelly's got your back with personalized service and coverage you can count on when it matters most. The Toasted Frog, trip around the Missouri Valley. Ooh, I want some of those pickles right now from the Toasted Frog, Kelly. I know we talk about them every week, but they're that good, right?
Yeah, things are going well up there. John and those guys, they do a heck of a job. It's the consistent, like we talked about, you know, with Coach Bostic, Speedway, he brought up. Yeah, I like going to Speedway or whatever. Just a mainstay that everyone respects and everybody loves. And that's Toasted Frog. They just love it. You know what I mean? It's a given. Hey, you don't have to question what you're going to get. It's going to taste good.
Yep. You know, the special tonight? Yeah, I'll go with that. Sounds good.
Yeah.
Never had a bad meal here. North Dakota State defeats South Dakota State 38-7. Boy, I didn't have that on my bingo card. Did you?
No, that was, I put on Twitter, you know, there was some excuse making going on about, you know, they're missing their quarterback. Chase Mason was out for South Dakota State, and that hurt, definitely. Okay. But, I mean, NDSU could have ran Quincy Patterson out there. Okay. And they were winning by 20. Okay. I mean, it was just a dominant effort up front, both sides of the ball by NDSU. South Dakota State is not nearly as good as they were. You know, a couple years ago, they had an all-star team. And last year, they were good. You know, they had a really good team last year. And this year team is not as good, but they lost all those guys to Washington State. I mean, it's just the way it goes. So they have a good football team. Like South Dakota State has a top 10 football team, no doubt about it. But NDSU was on a different level. I mean, it was not even in comparison. That was a good old fashioned butt kicking.
In the games you've watched NDSU play this year, are they better than the last couple of years, or how would you rank this version that you've seen?
I don't know yet. I mean, obviously they look pretty good. Yeah. It's hard to say because what people are understanding, I mean, I've seen some things on Twitter saying, you know, are they the greatest FCS team of all time? Well, FCS is nowhere near what it was. Okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, even 5 years ago.
Yeah.
5 years ago, I mean, if James Madison was in it and all these programs, it was a different league. And now it's not. So it's hard to say. By the end, let's wait till, you know, when you get down to the championship week. And, you know, then, okay, then we can have that conversation. But even then you'd be like, well, they didn't really, you know, the fields just aren't the same as they once were. So, yeah, we'll see. But, no, they're good. And they're, you know what, they're more diverse. It seems like they're opening up the playbook a little bit more. Before, they knew what they were good at and they just kind of did it and then smothered you on defense and then just, it was just over. Now they're kind of twisting the knife a little bit too downfield. They're throwing, I mean, they're going after you a little bit, not just running all over you.
Southern Illinois beats Northern Iowa 31-17.
Yeah, it was 31 win. It was 31-10.
31-10.
They added it. Well, actually, it was 31. Yeah, I think they scored to make it 31-10. Got an onside kick or something because all of a sudden I saw 31-17 right after it. So it wasn't that close, but yeah, Southern Illinois, I don't know. They're just not, yeah, you know, they're solid, but they're not dominant. But they were in control of that game. Let's just call it what it is.
Okay. Illinois State defeats South Dakota 21-13.
Yeah. Kind of an average football game. I watched a lot of it. Illinois State was missing their the Sapkowitz, I think his name is, star receiver. He's a good player. Missing him, but both teams – solid. They're mirrors of each other. You know, nothing flashy in that game whatsoever. Yeah, South Dakota just struggled. I mean, we got them coming up this week, and we'll get into it. But they just struggled to get anything going. But their defense kept them in it, though. But it was a, you know, eventually Illinois State pulled away. I think they're a better team.
One I really wanted to sit down and watch this weekend, but wasn't able to. Youngstown State versus Murray State.
Yeah,
I didn't have that one on my radar. 51-17. To me, yep. Kelly, what this week's Toasted Frog trip around the Missouri Valley means is the teams we need to win won.
Yes, I would agree.
And
I
let's hope that doesn't matter, but to strengthen our schedule, make wins look better than they are.
Right.
Everyone did what they had to do this week.
Specifically Southern Illinois, Youngstown. Sure, we probably would have wanted South Dakota to win just to look better because we plan on beating them. Because we don't play Illinois State,
That's right. We
don't want them to look very good, in my opinion. But it doesn't really matter. You got to beat who's in front of you. But, yeah, the Youngstown's still winning. Southern Illinois getting another win, you know, gets them to five. They each have five wins. That looks good on the resume.
When we beat South Dakota by more, then it'll look better this weekend
than
Illinois State. Speaking of South Dakota, it is that time of the show. It's the Rumors Sports Bar Grill and Casino 360 game preview, 1 o'clock, South Dakota. They still call it the Dakota Dome, or did they flap a sponsor on that thing when they made all the changes down there?
I'm hearing Dakota Dome. Now they might call it something Field or something like that. I'm sure they do. I think Sanford's got their hooks in there somehow. But yeah, I think it's still Dakota Dome. Renovations were made. Now they say the next wave's coming. Well, thank goodness, because it's going to be a structural changes now. To where I think this is the concourses are getting bigger, thank goodness. So, yeah, I mean, it's when you're inside there, they've turned it, you know, it's a football facility. You know, it's tight and it's, you know, seats, I think 9,000.
Because right before, range, but, if you'd been in the Minot State Dome, great dome for Minot, right? But it's a multi-use facility, right?
Yeah, like they had that basketball court up behind the seats on the one side. They got rid of that and stuff. Getting there, but it's like, geez, they spend so much money on that thing. It's crazy, but what, you know, whatever. I mean, I suppose you can't. I said, well, at what point do you tear it down and start over? But it's like, well, yeah, that would be another $40 million, you know.
Probably been 05, 06, 07 since I've been there. And it was always a neat place to drive up to. Like the stadium from the outside didn't look like, wow, this is pretty cool.
It's an air dome. You can't have the doors open.
The town isn't much known. Not knocking you, Vermilion, but it's not the most sexy town to drive into.
Teams need to stay in Yankton most of the time, you know, because they don't have a hotel that can service. you know, service meetings and catering food, that type of thing. Yeah. So he'd stay in Yankton. So
I was probably a lot. Early 20s the first time I went there for a game, and I'm like, this is where the South Dakota plays in this town. Oh, you know, fine. I was just like,
Valley City kind of comparison. Yeah, like, something wow. like that. Yeah. Yep. Oh, yeah.
I just thought this would be a bigger town. So, Coyotes lost a bunch of guys in the portal, and we've seen that from week to week. It's really cut into their depth, right?
It has. They're not the same. And you could say, you know, they got guys. Okay, they replaced them with guys, but the guys they replaced them with aren't as good. You can just tell. That especially specifically on the O-line, specifically linebacker is one spot. I mean, they had some linebackers lately that were so good. That Mogensen kid, big kid, he would just thump guys out there. 6'3", 6'4", kid, he's huge. And I don't see that out there. Their D-line's all right. But, yeah, O-line took a massive hit. They're gone. You know, they had a good O-line. The top, you know, call them three or four best in the Valley last few years. Good, solid O-line. And they're all gone. You agree, either portal or transfer or graduated.
We've been hit. Granted, it was a couple years ago, but we didn't really see the drop-off.
So right.
Would you say over the years we've probably had better depth at the O-line than South Dakota for what?
Well, yeah. We talked about this for all of last year. They recruited well the last couple years on a long O-line. We had 18 on the roster. I think we might still have right around that 17, 18 range. They want to have too many. And if they're going to overspend, UND is going to overspend on the O-line because they just got to get more of them. So now where you're seeing the benefit is the scout team. We can run a full scout O-line out there plus a couple guys standing around waiting to shift in and give a real look to the defense. So that's something big, you know, to be said for that. So, yeah, UND's done a good job. You know, portal didn't hurt them nearly as bad, and just they were able to keep O-linemen is the biggest thing.
Let's see. Scored on their first drive 7 times, and then they just kind of lose their steam. So they're good at scripting, and not adjusting, right?
Yeah, that's one way you could look at it. Yeah, I mean they've had some. They've
do
had
coaches
some tough
still
games.
Do that, by the way? Script that first drive to.
I think they do throw some stuff out there, see what works, and like I said, like we talked about Frickie, you know. Running stuff, motions in particular, and sets, just to see what the defense is going to do this week versus what they saw on tape. So now they see it and they're like, okay, we don't like that. Nope, I'm not running that anymore because they got it queued up. You know, we don't think that'll work. Here's what we're going to do instead. We're going to go with these sets, this personnel, because this is going to work against them. Yeah, I mean, South Dakota came out and scored right away, but then, like last week, I think they got a field goal, and then just their offense is now, you know, obviously it can change week to week because you have Aiden Bauman at quarterback, 6'5", 240. Kid can throw it around, lefty, you know, and he tore us up last year, had a ton of yards and up at the Alaris Center. But this year it's just different. They don't have the playmakers. They got the one receiver, the Lorenzo Fenner kid. He's a good player. He's taller, lanky kid. He can make some plays, but other than that, they don't have it, and they don't have it up front, so the time's not there. So I don't think it's not that these guys aren't making plays, you know. I'm not saying that. I'm saying the offensive coordinator isn't calling it because he can't. They can't do what they did the previous few years. They don't have the time, you know, and they don't have the running game. They had they've ran for a lot of yards. LJ Phillips.
Are you talking
Jr.
about the Vikings or the South Dakota? Because I think they got the same issues.
Yeah,
right
they
now.
Got the same issue. It's pretty much the same. That's a good point. I mean, that LJ Phillips, he's got 1,190 yards and 11 touchdowns. Now, 300 and some of that came against Northern Colorado, I believe. So,
and how much, you know, is that him making things happen or the play giving him that? Is he doing a lot on his own?
Well, there's some of that, yeah. And so he has a lot of yards. And it's like, okay, they can run the ball. No, they really can't. No, it's just not. It's not what you see. It's hard to explain. They're just not as good. Okay, let's put it that way. They're not as good as last year. I think the OC in turn is throttling it down a little bit due to that fact. And when they take shots, they'll take some shots, you know, 20, 25 yards downfield, sideline balls, one-on-one balls, okay? and they're just not connecting as often. And it's a little bit disjointed is my point. So the way we defend the run will help us immensely in this game, because we got five DBs in the game and they don't particularly have a lot of great deep threats like they used to in the past. So if we can just keep defending the run, you know, scheme fit it up front, we should be fine, because we should be able to cover downfield as well in this one.
Yeah, 4-2-5 defense allowing 26 points a game, allowing 41% on third down. I'll take that all day when I'm Isaac Frickte drawing up this week's game plan.
I would too. Yeah, I think they saw some things they can get. Now, I've mentioned good up front. D linemen are solid. Linebackers I don't like as much this year. Secondary's okay. You know, they're decent, but not what they were. They used to have a real physical, handsy secondary the last few years. And geez, they'd be holding and clutching, but you give them credit. I mean, they were just physical, real tough kids. You know, play the run tough. It's not that way this year as much. We got things we can do. You know, it's not particular. This isn't a game tank where you say, we're going to run the ball because we can. No, all hands on deck. You know, it's all plays, all formations. It's just you just make it happen in this one.
You see a lot of motion, maybe some run pass type stuff. Yeah. Spread the linebackers out, make them cover and play the field, and that's right. Where we might attack and have a good day.
Talk about those Hoskins, you know, reverse. Now the 4-2-5, they'll have more guys out there. They're a little wider. I've seen some alignments from them where, you know, I guess if you're getting that wide, you know, 4-2-5 look with the safeties and that rover, well, you know, it's not quite Hoskins territory, you know, reverse that type of thing. But if you can get him one-on-one against anybody, you know, you're okay with it. That's what you want to do. But between the tackles, we should win. Okay, we should win this one if they're going to sit there with six in the box and we'll have our five up front plus a tight end. You know, usually maybe we even go 12. I don't know. But our six on their six in this one, I like it. I like it, Tank, because it's just there's going to be room to run between the tackles in this one, in my opinion, the way I saw it. Illinois State found some things that they like too. And then we're taking our shots. You know, Coach Schmidt said, what, 2 a quarter maybe he said?
Possibly
8 a game if we can get to it. So we'll take our shots. There's print chances. Indoor game. No, I don't have to worry about the weather. So yeah, there's opportunities in this one. I like this matchup. South Dakota sitting at 5-4 on the year. They're not what they were the last few years, but they're solid. And this the history in this rivalry is the home team wins. That's pretty much the way the history goes. They came up to the Lara Center, finally broke the history of, I think they hadn't won since 1985 in Grand Forks. And
then
they finally won.
We had that wild finish to win the Great West that year, didn't we?
Yeah, I was doing the radio, I think, or something. I was there. What was I doing? Yeah, I was there. And that one, I think
We always won conference titles before the last week. So that was the difference between me and you.
Yeah, it was that last week we won that one. And then I was down in Vermilion when we won, let's call it 2008 or something.
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of a wild game too. So when these two teams get together, there's usually some fireworks and it gets a little weird and, you know, it's good for the crowd type of thing, because it's not the same, obviously, as UND-NDSU. But it's next on the list. Everyone remembers that South Dakota's, you know, a longtime rival.
Yeah. I encourage fans to get in the car and drive down there. It's not a bad drive. I don't know what it is from the cities. Probably not a bad drive from the cities either, is it?
No, it'd be just down to Sioux Falls.
Speaking of which, thanks to everyone that listens to us in the cities. Big market for us.
Are we? We're getting really some hits down there.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm starting to learn these analytics, but head on over. It's a fun place to go watch a game. You know you're gonna have decent weather.
Right.
Be good. I've always had cold beer in Vermilion before the game. Yeah, even when I was broadcasting. I think it's been long enough. I can say no, I'm just kidding. I think we need to do the picks here because I think we've hit pretty much everything. And going off our producer's notes here again, I just like the direction of the program. Talking to Coach Bostic today, it's same as what Mike Berg said. There's nothing that's going to phase this team. This coach has them locked in to control what you can control. And right. I think everyone's bought in. And I don't want to put the cart too far in front, but I just like the direction of this program. 28-14 UND, and I think that's a conservative score on my part. I think we'll put more up there.
Yeah, 28-14. I'm going to go a little higher, Tank. I'm last week I had 47-10. It was 46-10 after Miles Terry's safety. And I'm thinking, God, this is awesome. God, I can't wait to get on the show next week. And then we get a punt block for a touchdown. Like, God, it threw everything off. But yeah, that would have hit 46-10. So this week's going to be, I think we can get after them. I just like you said, I like the mentality. I like the direction of the program. They seem dialed in. They don't seem too high and they don't seem too low. They just seem ready to go on to the next week.
And if a guy comes out for a play, it's like, next guy up, you know, right. The old saying, and it's working, right?
It seems to be working. I'm going this one. I'm going to go 35-17, Tank.
We're
going to put up a little bit more. They'll score some because Bauman's good. He's a good quarterback. I respect that kid. Tough kid. Played against dad in college. His dad had an arm that was second to none of anybody, even in NFL terms. He had a huge arm.
That's probably why he was in the NFL.
Yeah, he was a good player. I'm going 35-17. I think UND goes down there again. Another solid showing versus a team, you know, that they can do this against and come back home and get ready for November 8th.
Yeah, 6-2 against 5-4 in South Dakota. Kelly has said it, the old Sitting Bull trophy would be up for grabs Saturday, but that thing has been retired, and maybe someday we'll get a new game, but a new trophy. Or is that what they call it now? Symbol?
Yeah.
Sometimes there's bells, traveling there's trolls, who knows, shopping carts maybe, I don't
Pigs.
Know. Yep. Rocks, I've heard some colleges do a rock, play for a rock.
That's weird.
That's really weird, but we'll think of something down the road here and we'll get something playing. But head on down, 1 o'clock, listen to the Fighting Hawks Radio Network, Jack Michaels and Mike Berg, or Midco will have the game because they carry South Dakota and UND. Should be a good one. Enjoy it, and we'll be back next week here on the Pregame Podcast.